You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Think of the relations between Muslims and Jews in the Middle East, and images of tension, of violence spring to mind. But the Jewish and Muslim communities in Metro Detroit are trying to focus on their similar histories and their shared future. And a big way of doing that is the annual series, A Shared Future. It's community conversations led by Wayne State University professors Howard Lupovich and Saeed Khan. This is the fourth year of the Jewish Community Relations /AJC and the Michigan Muslim Community Council have put on this series. The theme this year, Jewish and Muslim Migration, Histories and Trajectories. And it is a pleasure to say welcome to Howard Lupovich and Saeed Khan. So good to have you both on Stateside today.
Good to be here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So this lecture series that launches tomorrow is an interfaith dialogue series. And I know that the goal is to build relationships and unite members of the Jewish and Muslim communities in Southeast Michigan. And this issue of the migration, the histories and trajectories is so interesting. And I'm wondering, when did Michigan first become a destination for Jewish and Muslim immigrants, and what attracted them to Michigan? Howard, why don't you go first?
Well, the Jewish community of Michigan, and especially of Detroit, it has a similar history to other Jewish communities around the country, where essentially American Jewry is built on three waves of immigration, each larger than the one before. So there were a handful of Jews who came in the early years of the Republic. There was a larger migration of Jews from Central Europe in the mid-19th century. This second wave was about 250,000 Jews. It was part of a much larger wave of 3 million Jews from Central Europe. And this was the wave of Jews to America who moved west with the westward movement. And this was when most Jewish communities in the Midwest were founded: Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, St. Louis, Milwaukee. So the Jewish community of Detroit begins then. But it's after 1880 where the story really gets interesting, in a sense, where there's a much larger immigration of Jews from Eastern Europe, from Poland and Russia, essentially, and Romania, about 3 million Jews. And this is when the Jewish community of Detroit grows in both in number and in complexity and begins, well, it turns into the Jewish community that it is right now.
And what attracted them to Michigan?
Well, you split that question in two, because apart from the original Jews who came here, if Jews coming to America, if they knew someone in Michigan, friend or relative or a friend of a friend, that would bring them to Detroit or to Michigan. So the real question is, why are those first Jews come here? Usually it was for economic opportunity. I know at the turn of the 20th century, Detroit and especially Mount Clemens had a reputation of being very healthy, sort of the city of the future. So that's what brought these first. Is that really economic opportunity and the chance of a good life brought these original Jews. And after that, the Jews who came were mostly Jews who knew somebody who was already here.
And Saeed Khan, kind of track for us the same story for the what brought Muslim immigrants to Michigan.
There's really two different streams of Muslims in the Metro Detroit area. Of course, there's the immigrant community, which you see coming from the former Ottoman Empire, or the so-called Levant. Particularly, we see with organizations forming, the American Muslim Society in the 1930s, also, interestingly enough, a community from the Balkans, Albanians, coming in the 1940s. But of course, there's also here in the Metro Detroit area the added element of what I would call a migration of ideology, and that is among African Americans who embrace the Nation of Islam. One of the very first centers is right here in the Metro Detroit area. Now, as a result of that, that didn't necessarily mean that there was an awful lot of interaction and engagement with these two communities. In fact, they existed in many ways in parallel tracks, the African American community, and then as there was migration from the Middle East, you find that it builds as Henry Ford, of course, and we know the narrative of hiring people from the Levant. Initially, primarily, it was Arab Christians, but there were some Arab Muslims that came in along with that. Single men who then start to bring their families over, and that serves as a pull factor for more immigration. And Metro Detroit then becomes known as a destination for people who are still in the Middle East.
And when we think about as these new migrants arrived in Southeast Michigan, let's talk a little about where they settled and why. Howard Lupovich, wasn't the now long gone African American neighborhood of Black Bottom an early spot for Jewish migrants?
Yes, it's exactly right. That was one of the older Jewish neighborhoods. Really, the trajectory of Jewish neighborhoods in Detroit is a Northwestern movement where they were, as you mentioned, in Black Bottom and 12th Street. Then Dexter, the Dexter area was one of the really the major neighborhoods. And Jews, when this is something typical of Jewish immigration and migration, wherever Jews go, they tend to settle near other Jews, partly for reasons, you know, sort of ethnic cohesiveness, but also for communal reasons, to be part of a synagogue, to have access to kosher food, a Jewish school, basic Jewish community life. So there is a series of Jewish neighborhoods. And I can tell you personally, in my own family, my parents grew up in the Dexter neighborhood. My grandparents, they grew up in the Jewish neighborhood before that. You can see that Northwest trajectory.
Absolutely, because from that Dexter-Davison area, then it would be maybe more to Oak Park and to Southfield, moving into Oakland County.
Yeah, after Dexter-Davison, it was Northwest Detroit, the 6 Mile in Livernois, then Oak Park, and then Southfield, and Farmington Hills, and West Bloomfield. And really, you can sort of, when you drive down, let's say from West Bloomfield, you drive south on the Lodge back to Detroit, you're really driving backward in time through the history of the Jewish community in Detroit.
Saeed, what about the immigration track for the Muslim immigrants?
Well, particularly for those who are coming from the Middle East, Dearborn became a destination not because of the allure of Warren Avenue yet, but because simply of proximity to employment. If one were going to be working down at Ford Rouge 1, one wanted to be in walking distance to and from work. Of course, people may not have necessarily had access to buying their own cars. And as a result, around the factory, you see then housing as well as other institutions, mosques, restaurants, stores which cater to the needs of the community start to develop, and very much like has how he described the Jewish community coming together and congregating. You have that. I think it's really interesting to see that in many ways the factory becomes like a mosque. It becomes sort of the centering feature for a community.
And I'm wondering, as these migrants arrived, how were they received by existing communities?
That's a very good question, and it depends on which community you're talking about, because I would say as a rule, Jews would settle in a neighborhood that were, I mean, largely not unoccupied, but they would move into a neighborhood that wasn't full. So there always was a little bit of a backlash, I would say, in Detroit. I mean, there was no active resistance. The one exception, of course, being that Detroit was the home of probably the two most high-profile anti-Semites in America in the 20s and 30s, Henry Ford and Father Coughlin. But I don't think that really impeded it. The one exception is, one of the reasons that Jews moved northwest out of the city of Detroit and not northeast, is the first neighborhood northeast was Hamtramck. Mm. Hamtramck was largely Polish and Ukrainian American. Well, there was some, I would say, some lingering animosity towards Jews among in those communities that they brought over from Eastern Europe. So Jews tended to, in order to avoid those neighbors, they moved northwest. So it's interesting that one of the original Jewish, or several of the original Jewish cemeteries, which were built by Jews in the city, were built northeast of the city in Mount Clemens, because this was before Jews realized they weren't moving northeast. Mm. And as Jews have moved northwest, we live farther and farther away from these cemeteries.
And I should also note, by moving northwest, that also kind of took them away from that 12 Mile and Woodward Shrine of the Little Flower congregation of Father Coughlin's, too. So I can see how that fit.
Well, Royal Oak and Berkeley were really never places where, until relatively recently, where a lot of Jews lived.
Yeah. Mm.
I think in the case of Muslims coming to the United States, again, not Nation of Islam, but those coming from the Middle East, they were straddling a racial binary here in the United States. They weren't quite white, but they weren't black either. And as a result, it was more of a matter of navigating that liminal space when it came to issues of race relations, by and large, and especially because they were essentially in an enclave of their own making. One doesn't really see the kinds of racial or animosity that you would to other communities. Now, at the same time, Dearborn had probably one of the most fervent segregationists this side of the Mason-Dixon line, and that, of course, was Mayor Orville Hubbard. And he, of course, had something to say about anybody who wasn't white. But his remarks regarding Arab Americans certainly much more tempered than they were toward African Americans.
That is interesting. As you just joined us, we are talking with Wayne State University professors Saeed Khan and Howard Lupovich, who will be launching a series of community conversations called A Shared Future, bringing the Jewish and Muslim communities in Metro Detroit together, focusing on their similar histories and shared future. And this year's series of conversations explores Jewish and Muslim migration, histories, and trajectories. And Saeed, you touched on something I wanted us to dive into, and that is that really fascinating Dearborn hub in this narrative. And as you pointed out, it's legendary Mayor Orville Hubbard, a notorious racist. He was mayor of Dearborn for 36 years, going back to 1942. Certainly, Howard, you pointed out Dearborn's best-known resident, Henry Ford, anti-Semitic. And then now we see Dearborn as the center of this thriving Arab-American and Muslim population. So, Saeed, tell us a little more about how we reconcile Dearborn's past, you know, with the present and got to this inclusive Dearborn of 2019.
Well, numbers and demographics play a very big role in this. And at a certain point, there was the acknowledgement, even by somebody like Hubbard, that there is a community that is productive, that I suppose, to be very cynical, in his mind was also keeping out of Dearborn elements that he objected to having in Dearborn. So it probably wasn't his ideal situation. He probably would have preferred Dearborn to look like Grosse Pointe, but he was going to take what he was going to get. And it's important to see that how the synergy of Dearborn, particularly with the Arab American community being on the one hand cohesive and at the same point very thriving when it came to business, put Dearborn on the map in what he would even have to concede is a very positive light. I think that Hubbard would be very conflicted today when people talk about or try to cast aspersions on Dearborn as being a no-go zone and someplace where Sharia is implemented. How ironic that even Hubbard would probably have to push back on that.
It's kind of taking that and moving on and unspooling that a little bit more. That idea of being the other, of discrimination, has dogged these two communities. And I'm wondering how each of you would characterize the level of that in 2019. Is there more of it, less of it? Is it at a same level? Where are we now, Howard?
Oh, I would think that there is on a nationwide level, a national level, mm-hmm. there's been an uptick in anti-Semitism. There's no question about it. And it has become an issue in the last several decades. There's no question about it. How that translates into Detroit or Michigan specifically, I'm not sure. I'm not sure you can see that much specific. And I think, not to toot the horn of Wayne overly much, but I think Wayne State is in some ways an interesting microcosm of the city of Detroit itself, where at Wayne there was a large Muslim community and there's very little in the way of, for example, anti-Israel agitation, which is a source of what's often referred to as the anti-Semitism of the left. And I think this reflects something larger about the city of Detroit, where in Detroit you have a large Jewish community that's lived alongside a large Muslim community, both of which have been six figures for a long time, and there's really been no incident. I mean, that's something I think pretty distinct. Both those examples, Wayne versus other college campuses and the city of Detroit versus other places where you have Jews and Muslims together, I find it very encouraging.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of this has to do with a word that often isn't used regarding demographic groups, especially migrant groups. Everyone talks about assimilation. I would say that this is acclimation. The fact that Muslims and Jews in the Metro Detroit area are clearly not ambivalent. They don't just simply shrug their shoulders and walk by one another. But I think that there's an acclimation that seeing somebody who's Jewish, particularly here on Wayne State's campus, is not seen as a shock. Seeing somebody wearing a yarmulke is not a shock. There seems to be an understanding of how people can coexist within the same space without antagonism, without necessarily what is happening overseas being translated and refracted into an obligation of these communities to then be antagonistic to one another here.
And I would add that on this campus, and I think in the city in general, is, yes, we have discussion, debate, but we do it constructively and in a civil way. The whole, when people speak about the decline of civil discourse, not here.
That is something that leaders in the Jewish and the Muslim communities and other faith communities have really worked on a long time. I can remember when the Persian Gulf War broke out in the early 90s. being sent to cover a very, very pronounced effort. You had faith leaders from every tradition standing together. So to see an imam standing next to a rabbi and saying, we can come together, we can't let this divide us. And it seems like there really has been a lot of hard work put in over the decades by community leaders.
I agree. And I think it's a symptom of the fact that the Jewish and Muslim communities here are not only well organized, they have a sense of confidence and security enough to be nuanced and to understand, to avoid black-white, you know, to embrace gray area issues in a way which has a certain subtlety and in a productive and constructive way.
Yeah, these are communities that certainly don't put their heads in the sand, quite well aware of what's going on in other parts of the world and the fluidity of those situations. But they also are savvy enough to recognize that the optics may not necessarily be conducive to this day and age of social media and the wow factor. I like to oftentimes say that even if they're not working on bridges, they're working in the tunnels. And so there's always an activity, there's always an engagement. Nobody walks away from interacting with one another.
What do you hope people will take away when they come to the series of three community conversations you will be holding as part of this A Shared Future? What do you want people to take away from that, Howard?
I'm hoping people will see first and foremost in the subject of Jewish migration or immigration to America and the whole immigration experience, that there are these striking parallels between the immigration experience of Muslims and Jews if you allow for a time lag of about 80 years. So a lot of the discourse about Muslim immigration right now is very similar to the discourse about Jewish immigration in the 1920s. And from that, I'm hoping Jews who come to these will come away with a certain empathy, if they don't already have it, for the whole the situation of Muslims in this immigration debate, and that Muslims will maybe be able to, that there'll be some takeaway, learn some lessons for how Jews dealt with some very similar challenges back in the 1920s.
Saeed Khan, last word goes to you.
Oh, I would definitely agree with Howie. And in fact, I would add to that by saying that the Muslim community definitely looks at the example of the Jewish community as a template, similar in size, similar in values, similar in social structure, and as we would perhaps like to go ahead and demonstrate, similar and shared futures.
Wayne State University Professor Saeed Khan and Howard Lupovich will be giving the fourth annual lecture series, A Shared Future, an interfaith dialogue that kicks off on Wednesday by the Jewish Community Relations Council /AJC and the Michigan Muslim Community Council. It was great talking to both of you. Thank you so very much. I'm sure these are going to be great sessions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.